Nonprofit governance.
Nonprofit answers.
Nonprofit board.
Nonprofit management.
Nonprofit marketing.
Nonprofit resources.
Welcome to Nonprofit Everything, the podcast where hosts Andy Shurick and Stacy Wedding answer your questions about all things nonprofit.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Everything. I am here with my fabulous, fantastic co-host, Andy Shurick, and I'm Stacy Wedding, and we're so happy to be with you for another episode. As always, your questions are what make the magic happen, so send us those. And you know where to get us, you know, between social links, the website with the big ask a question button. We make it easy to ask us anything on your mind at any time. So we couldn't do this without those questions. And so we're always incredibly grateful for those. And we just always, I will tell you transparently, with these openings and with the closings, we always struggle because we want to make it sort of lively and different. And sometimes we're like, okay, we were just joking about engaging ChatGPT or one of these AI tools to write these for us because we never quite know how to jazz it up. So if you have a great idea for us to jazz up the openings or closes, we will take it. So we'll even, you know, send you your very own Nonprofit Everything sticker, which I know everyone just has to have, right? So I have them all over my office, just so you know, in case you were ever wondering. So I think, Andy, we need t-shirts made with them, like the big QR code.
No.
You're such a party pooper.
I'm a party pooper.
I still am inclined to get you a t-shirt, Andy. I was actually driving the other day listening to one of our recent episodes, and I wanted to buy you, and I may still at some point surprise you with a Dr. No t-shirt. So
for those who
wouldn't it be appropriate for those who listen to us, you'll have to listen to one of our past episodes to know what we're talking about, because that was an insider joke. So anyways, thank you for being here and enjoy this episode.
Okay, Stacy, this one's for you, and I promise it's not a question that I'm in some class that I'm taking. I'm not making you do my homework. This is a real question.
Ooh. You've got me very curious now, Andy.
What is a theory of change in practical terms?
Oh.
Sounds like an essay question, doesn't it?
So if
we're doing your
does.
Homework for you, shame on you. But also, the length of time between when you ask the question and when we're answering it probably means that what you're turning in is very late.
I'm just sitting here going, I do feel like I'm back in college or something. So I'm breaking out in a cold sweat. If any of our listeners could see me right now, I'm like, oh boy. I think the hard part is like practical or simple terms. Like, so, I mean, when I think of theory of change, right, I think of like how and why a desired change, you know, is expected to take place and under like a certain conditions or environment. So like, I feel like it's sort of like, what is that ultimate impact that we're looking to make? And I call it like this messy middle piece where, right, you've got nonprofits that know their mission, their programs, their services, they know what their goals are and where they're trying to go. But what is like that messy middle between when someone joins an organization, engages with an organization, like from that moment of engagement to the time that change takes place, like what exactly took place in that middle section? And sometimes that's right. Like, so I'm calling that the messy middle. So there, that's pretty like practical terms, right? But this messy middle idea of like, you know, we've got the long-term goal that's ultimately helping us describe like what's that social change we're wanting to achieve. And that change may not just be through our organization alone, right? It's not just our nonprofit, but it could be a variety of people in the ecosystem that help contribute to that change too. So thinking about like long-term goal, like backing it out with, you know, thinking about, okay, what are some short short-term outcomes, midterm outcomes, long-term outcome, like sort of it all builds on each other. And so like, if I think about it from, you know, I'm just trying to think of like a real life example. So let's say that there is a nonprofit focused on mentorship and their long-term goal is we're going to graduate high school seniors who are going to then successfully go on for post-secondary education, right? There's my long-term goal, but there's all sorts of things that are going to happen to get to that, and some things that my organization's going to do and some things other organizations are going to do. So like, it's so much broader than I think just one organization, and that's the thing that makes it sometimes icky and sticky and hard for organizations, because they're like, I have control over this, but then what is it that other organizations play a role in helping bring that change about too? And so really having that kind of big puzzle together is what I think of when I think of theory of change. How about you?
Well, you just went, so you filled up your blue book for your graduate level course in explaining theory of change. So I'm going to take it all the way back to
You don't think
undergrad.
That was, I felt like the messy middle was really like practical. You didn't think that was practical?
No, I think it was practical. I think, but I think I want to explain theory for those people that have just heard the words theory of change for the first time ever, like explain what it means. So when you have a nonprofit organization, like Stacey said, you've got a mission and a vision, but a lot of times you've also got activities that may or may not be directly related to your mission and your vision. And so what your theory of change is like, how does what we do, the specific practical thing that we do, actually help us get to our mission? Like, what's the connection between our activities and the outcomes? Like, so with a food bank, which is the easiest possible, actually a food pantry is probably the easiest thing, is people are hungry, so we give them food. Like that's as straightforward as a theory of change as you can think of. Is like, because by us giving them the food, they will eat it and they will not be hungry, right? When you start to peel back the layers of the onion, unfortunately, that's when you get real. What Stacey's kind of alluding to is it becomes much more complicated when you think about like, are we treating a symptom? Are we treating the root cause? Is it important to treat the root cause? Or are we part of, like Stacey said, this like tapestry of nonprofits that are all working together to sort of as a group tackle the root cause, because it's not something that one small organization can do. So I think as long as you can, and you know, Stacey, you and I both know there are plenty of nonprofits out there. Not plenty. Actually, there are. There are plenty of nonprofits out there who have never given a single thought to theory of change and have trouble raising money from donors because they have a very difficult time communicating how their activity has any impact on anything
Absolutely.
Related to their mission.
Absolutely.
Like they're doing something and they talk about, we're going to do this and this is the output and this is what the this is our vision about what the future is going to look like 10 years from now. And it's impossible to go like, okay, I can't get from point A to point B. Like what you're doing and what your final outcome, there's no connection between those two things for mm-hmm. me. So you need mm-hmm. to be really specific about this is how us doing this one thing is going to get us to our vision. Like there, this is how that thing connects. And coming up with a way to communicate it is part of your challenge as a nonprofit communicator, is being able to say, you know, I know we're doing this and it doesn't sound like we're solving X, but this is how we fit into the bigger picture. This is how other groups support us. And it kind of what, Stacey, what you were getting into there.
I love the idea though, of talking about it from a standpoint of outcomes. I mean, to me, I don't know how you fundraise or raise grant dollars or do anything without having some basic position put down on paper of thinking through some of these things, asking yourself those questions, right? Do we know this works? How do we know this works? Like what, you know, or is there other research? And I think that's one area that I think nonprofits that I've seen, they may not have their own data yet built to pull from, but there's maybe research or models in other parts of the country that they can say, okay, it's been proven that, you know, going back to high school graduation, just as the original example I shared, like it's been proven that there's a variety of factors, right? There's one-on-one you know, academic support and tutoring. There's some social emotional pieces of that. There is making sure that you have a supportive environment in the classroom and outside, right? There's all these like other things, but there's some data around it. So I think for those listening, if you're just embarking on creating this theory of change, what I'd caution you is not to get overwhelmed. I mean, I'd encourage you to like look at what other organizations are doing, like what is their theory of change? And they're probably not going to put here. I mean, unless it's like a grant proposal or something they're nerding out about, right? You don't usually go to a website and say, here is our theory of change. But you'll see some of the organizations that really do a good job of saying, here's where we're trying to get to. And we are one piece of that. And so our piece is important, but that's why we have these collaborations with these other pieces, because ultimately we're trying to move the dial on this. And so I think there's a lot of power in where this can go and how it can even impact. You know, think about if you're trying to move the dial on something and you realize, yeah, our activity doesn't seem like it's making the difference we thought it would. Like maybe we need to shift it a little, or maybe we're looking for a different outcome than where we're trying to drive toward. I just think, gosh, it's great to sort of course correct along the way. And I think it's normal too, because a lot of things, Andy, to your point, aren't as straightforward as like food, getting food to the end user, right? Like a lot of things are more complicated than that. And so being able to also give yourself grace with some of it, it's going to take, some of it might take some experimentation. Some of it might take, you know, just some different approaches than maybe you're using now. And that's okay too, because these are complex issues. They didn't become this way overnight.
Right. So what do you is developing your theory of change and like talking about it out loud, is that an important piece of your development of your mission and vision? Because I don't feel like we ever talk about that. We're doing big strategic planning things. We're like, we focus on the mission, and God forbid we talk about the mission statement for more than 15 seconds. And then we've got a vision, and then we talk about what our goals are and are they SMART goals. But do we ever like step back and, I mean, is that an important conversation to have, though?
So I think the reality is that what's happening and what actually should happen are two different things, right? So to your point, I think you get a lot of these strategic planning processes that forget or lose sight of the theory of change. And it's just sort of this business as usual. And almost that step back is a really powerful way. I mean, yes, I think it should be done. I mean, imagine how much more impactful and effective and excited people would be about strategic planning if they knew they were solving or being a part of the solution of a really large social issue. I mean, I just think it's a game changer, and it really changes the way you think about business you're doing and the work you're doing without it becoming so, oh, what's the word? Becoming boring and rote and like just do it because that's what you're supposed to do, instead of, is that actually helping us? So anyway, that's my long answer to that question, is I think absolutely. And yet I can't remember the last time I've seen or worked with an organization that's done that. And it takes time and it's messy to do it. And so I mean, this could get into a larger discussion that's not our question, but like that about, right, strategic planning and why the strategic plan is broken in so many ways, because I think people are looking to check a box and tell their funder they have a strategic plan and actually not always go through the thoughtfulness and the time it takes to think about theory. I mean, theory of change isn't like you just sit down for an hour and whip out a few goals, right? Like it's a much deeper conversation. What do you think?
No, I was thinking that many organizations, if they were truly honest about their mission statement would be, the mission of our organization is to perpetuate our organization.
Yes.
Like that's what the point of the whole thing is. And they never think much more deeply than that. But yeah, that would be really refreshing to hear some strategic planning processes that really dug into. So why are we here again? Like what exactly is it that we're supposed to be doing, and how does that fit into everything else? So yeah, it could open up an interesting discussion.
Well, and almost bringing it down with the question itself about what is a theory of change in practical terms, and you answering that more in a more basic practical way than I did, but really getting out of the jargon. I think people hear theory of change and there's this sense people shut down because of the jargon instead of just boiling it down to what the way you phrased it. I think that can actually help make it less intimidating and just talking about it in a way that everyone can relate to it. That feels a lot more powerful to me than let's create a theory of change together. Like people will just shrivel up and die right there on the spot.
Yeah, it's just jargon. Like, no, thank you. There's enough already.
Yeah. All right, Andy, here's one for you. Our auditors recently asked for proof of the board's decision to increase salaries for all of our staff. As executive director, I include salary adjustments in the budget presented to the board. The budget was ultimately approved by the board. Shouldn't the budget be enough proof that the board approved these salaries? It didn't seem like enough proof for the auditors. Why is this? I thought it was my responsibility as ED to determine staff salary increases, and that it is the board's responsibility to determine my compensation. I'm trying to understand exactly what financial decisions I need to document beyond an approved budget and investment strategy so that I can avoid the headaches of an auditor asking me all sorts of questions I feel ill-prepared to answer. Any suggestions?
So I'll start by saying you are right. Your auditor is asking you weird stuff. So you're correct, 100% correct. The board's job is to set your salary and to hire and fire you. Your job is to do everything else. The only time I can imagine that the auditors would be curious about something like that is if they saw something in the board minutes that directly contradicted what you said. So if the board minutes said something like, the ED, and they didn't. I mean, I don't even know why I'm saying this out loud. But if the board minutes said something like, the board is concerned that staff are overpaid and would like to know exactly how their salaries were determined before approving this budget. And then there was a motion and it was agreed upon and then you ignored it. Like, so then the auditors have like some grounds for saying, well, here's something the board said that they needed. And so can you show me where they got what they needed? But there's no chance that that actually happened. That would be a really weird scenario. I've never seen it. Stacy, I'm sure, has never seen it. Yeah, super strange. But so the question that becomes is like, how do we push back on auditors that are asking us crazy nonsense? Because that's what's happening here. Your auditors are like going totally rogue because clearly everything else that you did was perfect and they are bored and they're trying to juice how much money you pay them. Like that's the only other reason that they could be doing this, or, and this is the way more likely scenario. The first one was kind of snide. The way more likely scenario is these are newbie auditors. You're their first nonprofit. They're feeling their way around it. You've got somebody who's been doing this for exactly 15 minutes and they think that this is something that they're supposed to ask. So if it were me in my situation, if an auditor came back to me and said, show me proof that the board approved the staff salaries, you would get to say, well, the board approved, sounds exactly as you said in the question, the board approved staff salaries by approving the budget. This is the information that they received when they approved the budget. Here is the board meeting where they approved the budget and they said yes. And so we went ahead with that budget and we stayed within our budget, or we stayed within whatever percentage the board is comfortable with me going over the budget. And so there was no need to have any additional conversation with them. That's all you really need to tell them. Maybe it would be like depending on what you're giving the board for a budget, maybe that needs to be a little bit more robust. Maybe if they're only seeing a summary and the summary doesn't have a way for them to drill into details, maybe somebody mentioned that they were curious about what the details of the budget were, but most likely you should have those available for somebody if they ask. Like one of the things that we used to do and that I've seen lots of people do is to provide a summary budget, but then to say, oh, and also here's a PDF with all of the work. Like, so here's how everything went into it.
Yeah.
So if somebody has a question about like, where'd this number come from? Like then they can go either do the research themselves or they can ask you and you can say, oh, turn to page 153 and look at the bottom of column 3. And you can see that that's where that number comes from, right? Because you want to be able to support it. You don't want to say, I don't know. It just sounded like a round number. number to me, right? You want to be able to have some sort of reason that that number exists. So maybe that could be a little better, but I'm guessing based, you know, sort of based on the way you ask the question and the kind of the way the auditors are behaving, that they're kind of out of their lane a little bit. And it's up to you as a very skilled ED to figure out how to get them back in their lane without making them feel upset.
Is there, I've got a few follow-up questions. One, do you find this more typically maybe that an auditor, when they are a new, maybe it's not that they're new at doing nonprofit audits, but it's their first time auditing a particular organization, maybe, you know, the organization's made a change in auditors. Do you find, at least in your experience, Andy, that there's more scrutiny the first time? Like, could that be part of this? I'm trying to put myself in the auditor's shoes, and obviously I am far from an auditor, but like trying to figure out where could that happen? Like, it's your first time and you're like, we really need to dig in because we don't know this organization. I mean, it still doesn't seem appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, so the way it's supposed to work is that the auditor provides what they want up front. So before they show up, they say, here's the 75 things you have to give us either before we show up or right as we get there. If those things are done and everything's clean and it makes sense and it ties, you're usually in pretty good shape. If the auditor is brand new to your industry, and we see this a lot with food banks, because food banks are super weird, because most nonprofit organizations don't have $100 million worth of food inventory that needs to be, like, you need to do an inventory at the end of the year and count everything and then figure out what the value of it is. And there's just an awful lot of extra, like, brand new work that most auditors that haven't done a food bank have never seen before. This is totally new to them. So a lot of times you end up training them on some very specific industry things. Like, this is how everybody else does it. This is, you know, there's 200 food banks in the network. Here's how all 199 other food banks do this, which is why we do it that way too. And usually they're okay with it. If you provide them like half the work or your numbers don't tie out, then you've, like, it's like the red flag in front of the bull, right? And their eyes turn red and the steam squirts out their nose and they're like, okay, I got something to go after, right? So you want to make sure you've avoided anything that's going to trigger them and make them go crazy. So you want to make sure everything is clean and clear before they show up, or else you end up playing like, oh, well, that's where this is. And then it goes on and on and on and on and on. But if the auditors don't give you that, like, first group of things, that first 75 items that they're going to ask for, if they don't give you to that, they don't give that to you ahead of time with enough time for you to fill it out, that's when I would be concerned that your auditor may not know what they're doing. And there's some out there, you know, because anybody can say, you know, if you've got a CPA firm, you're going, yeah, oh, sure, we audit nonprofits all the time, and they're full of baloney. You're the first one they've ever done, and they're like going to go quick look it up and, you know, download the thing that tells them how to do it, right? Because that's a little bit of money for them. So make sure you're using someone that's done some before. Make sure you've read them. You know, you should be able to say, what other nonprofits have you done? And then ask that nonprofit, hey, we're thinking about using these auditors. What do you guys think? Can we see your audited financials to see what their notes look like and stuff like that? Feels like an extra step, but that's what your finance committee's for. Your finance committee should be helping vet the auditor to make sure that they're actually capable and know what they're doing.
I think the first time any nonprofit executive director goes through an audit, it's nerve-wracking. I can imagine. I'm sure that has got to be just like you don't know what to expect. And so I wonder, and I feel like we've touched on this in other episodes, but it may be worth repeating, Andy, like, what guidelines are there? I mean, I understand there's that list, right, for organizations, but what are there guidelines, like, for an executive director before they're thinking of getting an auditor, or before an organization's getting an auditor and just makes that decision, like, that they should be thinking about what to document, what, like, because I think people just don't know, right? And so, like, they don't know what they don't know. So they don't always know, okay, I spent, maybe the budget was approved and then something else happened and I gave an additional cost of living increase over the year, or I made this change to this financial, like, or it's, I don't know, like, to me, it's just like, I think people don't always know what they should or shouldn't be documenting or like making sure that they have a track record or whatever? Like, do you have, and I know that probably gets really into the weeds. So is there a broad answer to that that might help people? Like, this is when you should make sure you have it documented. Anything that is like, whatever, like this should be documented and approved by your board so you have a track record. Like, is there any kind of general guideline like that that you can offer?
Yeah, I think they're like probably three things that you need to make sure that you're following. One is just regular GAAP accounting. So this is sort of the nonprofit level of accounting. FASB tells you this is what you're supposed to do for a nonprofit. This is what your financial statements are supposed to look like. This is how you're supposed to handle different kinds of expenses. If you're working with a bookkeeper, so if you have an internal finance person, they need to be skilled enough to know what that is. If you're working with a bookkeeper, you should be working with a bookkeeper that actually is skilled enough to know what that is, that can actually create financial statements that are under generally accepted accounting principles, which is what GAAP stands for, and take into account everything that FASB, which is the Financial Accounting Standards Board, has said this needs to be in nonprofit financials. So, and that gets updated all the time. There's all kinds of weird arcane stuff that nobody knows, like capital lease credit nonsense, like stuff that like only one person understands. And so you don't have to know it all, but it has to be pretty good. The second one you want to worry about is what's on the 990. So on the 990, especially if you're doing the full 990, which Stacey and I 100% recommend,
yep.
There's a list of governance type questions, which are things like, do you have a conflict of interest policy? Like, has it been reviewed by the board? And these are all things you want to check yes to, or, and there's some things that you want to check no to. They don't make it that easy. You could tell a nonprofit that is not good at the 990 because it's like all yes or all no. And you're like, well, you don't really want those to all be no. So you should probably go read them before you check them. Right. So some of those things, like, you know, do you have less than three board members? You don't want to check yes to that.
Right.
Stuff like that. So you want to make sure everything on the 990, everything that it asks you for, you're doing that as well. And then the third thing is your bylaws. So if your bylaws say quorum is 75% of people whose name starts with the letter L, and the board meetings can only be on Thursdays before 9 p.m. and everything needs to be faxed to everybody, you need to make sure you're following all those rules, because that's another thing that the auditors are going to look at. They're going to look at your board meeting minutes. They're going to compare those to your bylaws and make sure that those two things connect. And that's a lot of times where they get their questions from. So if they're asking you something like, why are you talking to me about this? It's because they read it in the board minutes, which means that either you need to take less comprehensive board minutes so that the auditors don't go nuts, or you need to get a little bit more control over what your board talks about and votes on. So those are the three things: financial accounting standards, GAAP accounting standards, the 990, and your bylaws. And if you're good on those three, you should be good. There shouldn't be any surprises after that.
Well, thank you for that education. I know that in some of my work, I get people asking me these things. I'm always like, oh, let's put this on the podcast because I am not your expert in this. But I also know that I hear the sort of panic and the sense of, what am I not doing? I thought I was doing everything right. And sometimes I think people have to go into audit situations understanding the job of the auditor, and you are going to get asked questions, and that's their job. So it doesn't
that's
mean
their job.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you should be getting defensive. It just means that they're asking a question. So
and I think most people that are doing things right, that are trying hard, like, unless you have an auditor that's just horrible, like, most auditors are not there to make you miserable. And I think the best attitude to take going into it, especially if you're nervous about it, is this is somebody who's coming to check my work. That's it. They're coming to see how I did. And unless you already think you know everything, like, you shouldn't be upset when they find weird stuff. And they're like, did you know that capital leases need to be done this way? And you're like, nope, I didn't know that. Can you help me figure out how to do it right next time? Right. And just like, make sure you don't make the same mistake 2 years in a row and you'll be fine. Thanks for joining us today. Stacey and I really appreciate that you've taken time out of the day to listen to the podcast. We can't do it without your help. We need the questions. We need you to listen. We need you to share. We need you to review and rate and do all those things as well. You can send us questions to nonprofiteverything.com. That's the website. There's a yellow button to click there. You can email it to questions@nonprofiteverything.com. You can find us on various socials. or join us on Discord. We actually just recently, so Google is sunsetting their podcast app and they've moved all of their podcast content to YouTube. So all of the sudden there's 150 something episodes of Nonprofit Everything available on YouTube. It doesn't have our faces. It's just a static picture. So there's nothing any different about that than listening to it in your car on the way to work, but it's there. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that makes it easier to share. It's certainly made it so that we've gotten lots of, spammy comments already.
Ooh, so joy.
one of our episodes, it's been a long time too. Somebody asked if they should accept Bitcoin. And so the title of the episode had the word Bitcoin in it, which is apparently a magnet for crazy people selling you nonsense. So here's today's life tip. Don't put anything on YouTube that has the word Bitcoin in it unless you want spam email. All right. Thanks for listening. We will see you again in a couple of weeks.